Hello, and welcome to Out of the Frame, conversations about photography. I'm Pia Johnson, your host, and this podcast features conversations about photography, creativity, and the world we live in. I'll be talking to other photographers, curators, academics, and researchers about their work, artistic process, and how they feel about contemporary photography. Today's episode of Out of the Frame, Conversations About Photography, was recorded on the lands of the Jarjar Wurrung country. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land that we live, work, create, and thrive on, the people of the Kulin Nation. I pay respects to their elders, past and present. It always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Tonight I have a really special guest, an international photographer, Hannah Moon, joining me tonight on the podcast. Hannah is an artist, photographer, creative interloper, born in South Korea and based in London. Her first critically acclaimed contribution to fashion culture was the launch of her magazine, A Nice Magazine, created by Moon for her graduation from Central St. Martin's, London in 2014. Intentionally working with ideas and subjects outside of the conventions of fashion photography, Moon has defined herself as an important new voice in the field. Moon breathes new life into fashion with her personal narratives and truths and her acute sense of how to create the visuals of our time. She brings her inimitable approach to image making and prodigious knowledge of editing, design, casting and styling to publications including ID, Dazed, Another, M. Le Monde, Pop, Dazed and Confused, Reedition, Arena Homme Plus and British Vogue, as well as the visual identities of brands including Hermes, Gucci, Miu Miu, Marc Jacobs, Fendi and Supreme.
Well, thank you so much for joining me tonight, Hannah. I really appreciate you making the time. I thought we'd begin by just starting with you letting us know how you got into photography and what your early influences might have been.
So I came to London from Korea to be a study abroad student. So just for studying English, basically. But I still wanted to do something more relevant than just English course. So I decided to go to CSM. But I really loved being there. And I ended up actually graduating the course. And the degree was fashion communication with promotion. So it was anything to do with fashion besides design. And part of the course had this like a small photography teaching bit. So we were learning like black and white image, like processing and printing. And I fell in love with it. And also we had to make a magazine as a final project in the course. And obviously I had to produce a lot of material myself, and including photography. So, yeah, that just happened like that naturally. And then that magazine kind of got picked up by some fashion people in the industry, luckily. And then, yeah, I got a few jobs straight away. And Emma Wyman, who was fashion editor at Dazed at that time, she asked me to do a project for Reedition magazine after seeing the final project. That was my very first editorial.
Yeah, wow. That's pretty impressive. I mean, I think that journey from going, I just want to go and learn English, all the way to like your first fashion job is really cool. The magazine's called A Nice Magazine. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you tell me why you decided to call it that? And also, can you describe what the content of the magazine is? Because obviously, that's a number of years ago, and I haven't had a chance to have a look at it. I've looked at the more recent one. But, yeah, can you kind of, you know, as that final bachelor degree, like, big project, was it lots of collaborations? Like, it's an unusual name, A Nice Magazine. So, yeah, how'd you come up with it all?
So when we were given that task for the final project, everyone had the same brief, but some people decided not to do the magazine and the exhibition and different things. And then at the time in my head, magazine isn't really made by one person. Mm. And then I was kind of questioning how that could be your final project. Does that mean I have to collaborate with other people? And at the same time, I was sort of rebelling a little bit in a way that, do we need more magazines out there? Mm. Like, there's so many magazines out there, and like we don't even get to look at all of them. And like, it was just almost like kind of overwhelming how much is out there. In that sense, I was like, well, okay, I'm going to kind of name my magazine as one of those nice magazines. So it's what's called A Nice Magazine. And then I decided to have that bit of like rebelling spin off it in the magazine. Actually, I was collaborating with a lot of people. And yeah. And I had, at that time, like a fashion street photography was quite like mainstream, like a sartorial wrist and like,
oh, of course, that was huge at that time, right? Yeah.
And then so I was like, oh, no, I'm gonna do like a street fashion street photos, but in like really random spots and like with really random people. And so we went to like Westfield shopping malls, and like my friend would just like literally take pictures of like anyone he can grab. So I was interning for Tyrone Le Bon at the time. He's a fashion photographer. He's like quite big, but I was working for him like part-time at the time. And I asked him to photograph this girl for the magazine and explain that I will do the same. And we're going to put the
story together. Like, yeah, okay.
So the intern and the photographer. So that kind of like a bit of provoke to the industry and the kind of talking about hierarchy, and then why is this more important? Why is this less important? What are we actually pursuing by making these, you know, artworks in the magazines? And I think also being a student is a kind of bit frustrating in the sense, because you're trying to get all the like chances or like opportunities, and then you get rejected a lot. So maybe that kind of like came from that sort of, you know, space. And we had writing pieces that kind of talking about all this stuff as well. But yeah, ironically, after I was being quite critic to fashion industry, that's when they like responded pretty well to it. And I was wondering if they actually have read the texts, but whatever, I was like grateful. And then I think for the other issues, I kind of carried on with that spirit. So the second issue was more about art. And third issue was more of, I guess, female individuality, or like how where we place ourselves, and how does that make any difference being female in the creative industry even now?
There's a quote that you use of Dorothea Tenning that, as part of that, and as a provocation, that it doesn't have to be a female artist, it could just be an artist, essentially, was the sentiment. And I remember Dorothea Tennings was like one of my favourite artists and has been for a really, really long time. And I was sad that I didn't get to see that show at the Tate. I have the catalogue, but I couldn't get to London to see it. And I remember there was all these books of like women surrealist artists, and she hated it. Like, she was just like, I'm an artist, you know, but I think because obviously surrealism was just full of blokes, the women really didn't get the same, I don't know, all of it, any of it really, than they did. And I thought it was really interesting to think about that right now when, you know, post Me Too, post all these kind of movements of, you know, different ways of feminism, in a way, we've got lots more capacity to have a voice as either a female, queer, or female identifying. Do we still have to keep, I guess, pushing that envelope? And so I was really fascinated by what the new magazine is trying to do. And you've got so many different voices within the new magazine looking at that. How did, like, did you just kind of pitch that to those people, or did you kind of go, hey, I think it's time to like do another magazine? How did it begin?
So yeah, I went to the show and I loved it. And I actually didn't know much about Dorothea before walking in, but people were just recommending that it's a really great show.
Yeah.
And I was particularly struck by this one painting. And I, as a whole exhibition, I just loved how funny she is. And then like these dogs and like she has this like a shih tzu in a lot of paintings, like hidden and things like that. I love this. And then there's a bit of humor and there's lightness to it. And then when I saw this portrait of herself, she was like, she's quite small in the painting and she's looking into this massive landscape, like quite desert.
It's Arizona, I think.
Yeah, Arizona.
Yeah.
And she's wearing only like a little, like leotard or like a little like underwear garment maybe, and wearing this like a Chinese blonde hair, and then I can only see the back of her, and then she's just standing like holding hands together like this, and then I burst in crying because I just really that feeling really transcends, and maybe I was projecting so because I don't want to like speak for her, but because she has been like really brave in a way that like how being female artist at the time and then kind of got married to really famous female surrealist artist. And I had seen like what she has done to stay afloat. Like she was doing the illustration for like newspapers and then she had to do whatever comes in her way, but that she still kept the humor in all the paintings. And I was just like really impressed how even she might have felt a bit like lonely or like struggling, but still she kept herself as who she is and she didn't compromise like her humor, and then she still could be that. That really touched me. And
there's something about that painting though, like she is so small in that really vast landscape.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always think, because Birthday, which is one like that big first self-portrait with the, again, the humour, you know, the twig skirt and the gargoyle. Yeah. And but there's something about the one that you're describing where, because we can't see her face, I feel like you're the one standing like with her looking out. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? There's like just strength of that composition and the idea of self and body in space or in landscape and just the vulnerability of it. I think it, like, I totally get that. And they were a really quirky, like, I think she was his like fourth wife or something crazy, right? Mm. So she just would have had such resilience, I think, to continue and, as you say, be really brave and just continuing and getting it done and doing the work that she wanted to do, but with that humor and that like amazing intelligence, I think.
Yeah. So I think like for me, what's interesting is that it's not the fact that we are female, is that more about how us being female affect our work. Because if I think about it, if can a surrealist artist guy can do that painting, I don't think so, because I think like her like particular positioning, like social positioning, kind of like affect how she expresses herself, and you know her particular experience, you know, affects your work. And I think that's still really relevant these days, because I don't normally like to limit ourselves into like, oh, we're just like, you know, gonna be in a female gaze, because I think I think the intention is to give us platform, but sometimes I think you almost is kind of reduced to something. It's almost like I find it quite limiting in a sense.
It becomes essentialist rather than expressive.
So I always kind of wanted to question that part, but you can't really grasp exactly what it is, and also it's kind of like quite difficult subject to talk about. So in the magazine, I asked the artist to just, I explained about my inspiration, and the theme is me, myself, and I. So it could like be read as like a self-portraiture, but at the same time, I said, I think any of what we produce is kind of a reflection of who we are. So I didn't really want to like limit to like, you have to take a picture of yourself, or like it has to be about you, because I believe that any work you produce is part of you anyway.
I guess the other thing to think about, if we continue that line, is I guess adding then the kind of like female, Asian, photographer, queer, you know, lots of labels, lots of boxes, but also that intersectionality then it gives you, you know, like you kind of, you own that positionality, you own that perspective, you put it into your work. You are, you know, you kind of forefront those things, but they're always there, you know? And I think I wonder, as you said, are you pigeonholing, or is it just actually, I'm just being honest about where the work's coming from and all the different influences of my lived experience goes into the work. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? And I guess that idea too of being born in Korea and then living in London and the kind of cross-cultural, in-between culture stuff, either in your life and in your thoughts, but also in your work.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that was a really big question.
Yeah, I'll try my best, but you might have to
find what the question was actually.
I think it could be a blessing or a curse, but I think it's more a blessing for where I am and what I get out of it. That's why I think about labels a lot. That's why I kind of wanted to challenge kind of the female gaze notion. And because I constantly think about what it does to me, to all these labels, but at the same time, it's there. And I think when you first move to another country, you kind of want to push away from like your where you were from to explore. But then I think it comes back to you afterwards. So, being queer, particularly, I didn't really felt I belonged in Korea that much to begin with. So I came from quite a small city, and then I moved to Seoul to go to university, which was like very exciting for me. And then I came to London. So it was like actually like really big jumps for me. And then that has been like really exciting. But then after the excitement kind of comes down, then you really think about what is this? And I think it's the same way I was talking before, that I don't want to force things to happen. I kind of really trying to dig deep and really let me like throw myself into it. So I don't have to like think about all these notions and all think about what I should do. So it's more of like a kind of free roam. And I believe that that's the best way to bring all this part of your identity to come out, rather than like really focusing on to talk about one topic. Because I also don't believe in it, that one work is going to change the world, or one work's going to really define you. I think when you look back on it as a retrospective, then I think you kind of come out as a whole thing. But I think that could be many different things. Me being Asian, me being female, me being someone who lived in West Country for 15 years as an Asian person who's living in a very patriarchy industry. I think all these elements is part of me, but then I don't think like labeling as one thing kind of helps it. So I'm always battling with like a junction where like all like trying to reject all the labeling, but at the same time embracing what it is, the reality of it. And so I do talk about the in-betweenness as a sort of like a positive place for creativity, because I think unexpected things or like my like misunderstanding of the culture or the language could be something positive in my creative work, because that's kind of unimaginable for people who understand everything like completely.
Totally.
So, all these like different things kind of contributes my creative work. And in a way, I think I'm very lucky, because I think I feel like I have more resources to go back to than like a, you know, monocultural background or like, you know what I mean? And one other thing is that I think people are kind of, when you're in a position of like being labeled constantly, I think like people get quite wary of it. But for me, because I'm also a commercial photographer, I get like jobs for being who I am. Like I get to go to Asia a lot because I guess I'm an Asian photographer. And then like some people can like feel that that might be like a bit uncomfortable that you're like kind of being tokened or whatever.
Oh, I see.
But I think I see that as an advantage in a way that like...
No, totally. I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't mind actually exploiting that. And then I can also channel that like, you know, resource to other things once I made it, you know what I mean? So I don't know, I'm kind of more like broken free out of that. So I don't really get that angry either. And like, it is what it is. But because I think that actually works in my advantage many ways.
Yeah.
But also maybe it's to do with industry being more open. Because I think when I was graduating, that's like when the Black Vanguard was kind of happening. Like Wales Bona was in my ear. And Yves Camara was a year below me in the same course. So everything was kind of bubbling. And I think people were more ready to embrace differentness to other people. And I think I was also lucky to be part of that.
Yeah, I understand that. I feel the same in some ways here too. There's different opportunities in being able to have that openness in industry and also to be able to engage in topics and experiences that, as you say, others don't have and the nuances of that and the shared ways of knowing and being, I think, like when, as you say, like if you're going to different Asian countries because you're Asian, that you'll have an ability that somebody else might not have, or a perspective or a braveness to try something that maybe someone that doesn't have your background can do.
Yeah, but also I think that could be an assumption of the client.
Potentially so too, right?
It's
yeah.
quite easy.
To go both ways.
Quite lazy as well.
Yeah. Well, I also wonder, is it because people are scared also to send like a white person? You know, maybe.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I don't know. I can't really pinpoint. I think it makes sense for me to be in Korea because I can actually speak Korean.
Yeah, but like, would they send you to? I don't know.
I go to like China. I go to Japan.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe they do. Maybe they do think that I have more of a cultural understanding of what Asia is, and then I think brands are more putting more efforts about really trying to like kind of be more sensible about the culture in a way that like, for example, like a summer clothing or like a swimwear, for example, like we don't really wear bikini in Northeast Asia, at least, because people are just scared of like being so tanned. So it's like all these different like notions, and they have to like maybe like advertise in a different way, and then maybe they hope that I have more understanding for it. I don't know. I can't really tell exactly why, but also I do understand like there's a complexity of the reason why I'm being chosen on top of being Asian, but I just don't want to be like so judging about it.
Yeah, fair enough. I think that's fine. I mean, I think that's, as you say, the advantage point that you can take. It's like you're benefiting, you get the opportunity, take it as what it is, but also bring to it whatever you may bring to it. When I talk about it, I always think about sensibility, living kind of with different cultural identities or in-betweenness, you just have different sensibilities. So there might be you might bring an openness that rather than an assumption, maybe it's about, you know, they think.
Also, I think, because for example, I can redistribute that resource to something more meaningful and something more I can like voice.
Yeah.
So I always describe this as like, I don't mind getting my hands dirty.
And yeah.
Everyone can do their own revolution in all different ways. And I think what we should do is that not to judge anyone for their method.
I love that.
So it's not that I don't care, but then I think like, you know, there's many ways to fight for different things. And that's the path I chose.
I really like that. Can I talk about that maybe then into thinking about what you think about the fashion industry at the moment and how, you know, your work is sitting within that? Because it is different and it has a different, humor. I don't know, there's this kind of rawness to some of your images that is really unique.
Oh, thank you. That's really nice to hear.
I love them. I just, and they feel, it's weird because I would, you know, there's, I want to put it in inverted commas, that authenticness, but like it feels like they are in the moment, like they're really expressive. And that's what I love about them. And dynamic is probably another good word for it.
Yeah, actually, that's what my therapists always say, Hannah. Authenticity is very important. like everything goes back to like Hannah is authenticity. I think maybe also that is to do with who I am, like, and I'm trying really hard to not to lose myself in like different environments. Maybe that's where it's coming from, or maybe it always has been really important for me to be who I am. Also how I mean, I didn't actively hide that I was queer. I was like hitting on a lot of girls in school. But I didn't come out to my parents until very recently.
Oh, it's classic. Yes. Yes.
So it's kind of like I didn't reveal myself in a fully. And so maybe like expressing who I am is kind of priority for me. As an adult, as a creative, maybe that affects the pictures. And I do kind of struggle with too much of like being like staged, because that's what happens a lot. And I don't mind having concept. I think it helps have like kind of given character and act with it. So when it kind of feels like performance, I don't mind. But then when someone isn't really giving me who I am. So even if you're doing performance, you have to kind of interpret in your way. So maybe there's a bit of element of you. But then when that's like what I'm looking for in the photo shoots, that I kind of want to have a piece of you. It's not that I'm going to direct you how to do a pose.
Yeah.
Or like you can't just give me the pose everyone's like being taught in like a model school or something. So I'm kind of always looking for that bit of authenticity in everyone. And it's also quite hard time to time because it's different, like everyone has a different way to do it, and some people are just not really comfortable with it, and then I have to adjust my tactics.
Okay.
And it doesn't always work either. So just the nature of fashion photography is that you have a limited amount of time and you have to actually work with that day to get into open someone. And so, I guess that's why it's quite raw. I don't hide that it's quite difficult. I don't hide that, like, maybe it fails sometimes and maybe sometimes it works. And I embrace that nature of it. And maybe that's why it feels a bit raw.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like that you don't mind that it doesn't work sometimes, or that it's hard work, maybe, is also another way of thinking about it. Because it then feels collaborative, right?
Because I understand that some people could be more reserved and then it takes more time to open up for them. And then I totally understand that, because we have very limited time. And if you're not ready, that's what it is. So, yeah, I kind of try to respect who they are, in a sense, in the photography. And but sometimes I get really frustrated and I could get quite snappy maybe, and then maybe they like react to my snappiness and then I capture that, you know what I mean? Like, it could like be all different ways. But I do embrace that in the image.
Yeah. And do you think that makes a difference in terms of where fashion photography is going right now? Because it feels like there's a huge variety of different types of photography within fashion at the moment.
Yeah, I think the documentary sort of style was quite big recently, and then it's kind of going down again. But I think, like, maybe it's different but not different, because I don't think people have enough time and resource to produce work in a sense, like, in comparison to before. And I'm the same. I'm not actually doing that much editorials, because how people consume images have changed massively, like with Instagram. It's more like instant, like this. And I think, like, brands are, like, kind of more conservative. They're, like, less open to creativity, and they want to stick to what they know already. And at the same time, having Instagram as a platform, you can be picked up really quickly. And in that sense, we have more diversity, because you don't have to go through, like, traditional route to be a fashion photographer. If your work is cool, you can be picked up and you could just do, like, a massive campaign, like, the next day. So I think, like, the way you can, like, get into the industry is, like, more diverse, I guess. But I don't know if I feel that if I see more variety of works, like, because that's what brands want. I think in that sense, I don't really agree with that.
Interesting.
But I think, like, you know, the photographers who's been doing this job for a long time, I think maybe people tend to do more, like, personal projects, let's say, than, like, carry on doing more editorials.
Okay. I was listening to a really interesting couple of podcast interviews that Jem Fletcher does on The Messy Truth. I'm not sure if you know that.
I do.
One with Alicia Gaviano and one with Paul Kukier. And he was saying, you know, fashion, it's like he did his own thing and then the fashion industry kind of asked him in. And it's really different compared to having to kind of prove yourself as a fashion photographer. And Alicia said something really interesting, which was, you know, she feels like people need to be more courageous now. Like, we're all a bit kind of polite and politically correct. And and I think it's kind of fascinating, because I'm kind of thinking about the point that you said, that there isn't a more variety of images. But I think through the different mediums, we get different styles of when different types of photography. And as you say, like, things have maybe bled in, like, different versions or different genres of photography have come into the fashion kind of language of images. But then you have, like, key voices, as you say, or people that have been doing it forever that have their kind of style that brands might want to replicate or do, or yeah. But it's interesting that you're saying that editorial is maybe not as prevalent as it used to be.
Yeah, because I heard Alessia, is her name Alessia?
Alessia, yeah.
Yeah, I heard her podcast too.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it?
And
it was
I totally agree about the political correctness, because I think everything's like kind of a bit boring because it's being filtered a lot. And I think like all the brands have like a consultant who tells you what's allowed and what's not, and the cancel culture and everything. I think that, you know, in a way, like it works in a both way. I think it's complex. You can't just say one thing is bad and one thing is good. I think like the direction towards what we want to do is good. But then I think the side effect of that is that people kind of are a bit scared of like doing variety of things. And that's what I always think about too, as well.
Oh, wow. And, okay.
And that's why it's good for me to have my own platform. So, you know, I can do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah.
Like, and I have a lot of nudity in my magazine. I mean,
I have seen. Yeah. But
and then that
it used to like be like that all the time. Like in Australia, there was a big one years ago in the 90s called Black and White. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It was always nudes, like just. Yeah, it was kind of quite celebrated for it. It didn't feel risky, actually. It was just like, just artistic in a way.
I mean, you would never know just by seeing the images, like if it, how it's produced. But then I think like just it's kind of still worth having at least a conversation. And there's a different form of voices. And just having that itself is quite important for me, that like just to say that like, you know, like this is also the way to provoke and speak about yourself and fight your own way. It's just to say that not everything's black and white. And that's kind of like a feeding back to what I was saying earlier, that I'm like taking these resources and then fighting my own fight and, you know, being able to express who you are without any, you know, like limitation.
You photographed Gemma Chan for British Vogue and Vivienne Westwood for Dazed. Vivienne Westwood was like one of my heroes back when I was a lot younger. Were they highlights? Do you want to talk a bit about that, or just let us know what it felt like? Definitely to be the first Asian to shoot a cover for British Vogue, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Actually, that's the question. I wasn't really sure what to say. But then recently I've been thinking, like, what was the best moment? And then, like, I'm just going through my Instagram reel because I've got terrible memory unless I visually see something I don't remember.
Yeah, okay.
And I remember it was a shoot for the second issue of my magazine. And I was in Japan with my friend Joyce. Joyce NG, who's also a photographer, but we're had graduated school and we studied together in the course. And at the time, she wasn't really sure what she was going to do, like, and she was kind of doing a bit of styling. And so I asked her to style, but I mean, we didn't actually have a shoot. So yeah, we're in a Kabukicho, which is like a kind of like a gay, like bars and, you know, all this like hostess and kind of like a dark, like a area, like gay area of Japan. And we went to this bar called Candy Bar, and Yoshida, who I think at the time, like she was just cross-dresser or maybe she was transitioning. But she was our host and I was just talking to her all night. And then we really got along. So I asked her, like, do you want to be a model for our shoot? And she was like, oh, I'm really busy. I'm only available around midnight tomorrow. And I was like, that's perfect. We'll just like gather again around midnight. But she didn't really speak like perfect English. So we didn't even know that she was going to turn up.
Okay.
But yeah, she did. And then we met up in the Kabukicho again around like midnight. All of us were very drunk. And we just chose this car park, like really nearby, to take some photograph. And then she was getting changed in this like a building right next to it. And then like Joyce at this point, she couldn't even stand. She was so drunk, like handing clothes like over her head like that she had to sit down. And like So you see, that was like getting changed in the building, but then actually she didn't care if anyone saw. Like she was just like changing it's whatever, free. Like
yeah,
free. And then they were like just like laughing so much, and she would like pose over the car in the car park, and like we're just like doing like just really enjoying ourselves. And then I was looking at the pictures, and I was like, you know what? These are like that was the best shoot I've ever had.
Wow.
It was so fun.
I love and that.
I love the pictures. So I think like when you're under a lot of pressure when these kind of big publications with like big celebrities, and of course it's really nice to connect with these people and like do something with them. But if I have to pick like the like best shoot I've ever done.
Yeah. It would have been that one.
That one with Yoshida, because it was so fun. And I actually haven't done that for years.
And do you think it's about that spontaneity and that enjoyment of just, like we go back before, you know, being in the moment, the humor, the craziness of a new space,
yeah,
and the impulse of just asking this person, hey,
yeah,
come and make photos with us, yeah?
Yeah, but then I think that kind of fades away on, like, if you're in the industry for a long time and then okay, it became more routine, and then you have all this, like, help, like, you have got so many assistants and,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
the environment and, like, all these barriers. I mean, you still meet and
right,
then you kind of encounter, yeah, 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 encounter a lot of different people within it. So yeah, it's not entirely, like so rigid, but then I kind of miss that spontaneity and the fun without any responsibility. Yes.
Yeah, that's cool. Could you talk about your monograph, Korea Almost Something? Again, it just, I unfortunately have not been to Korea. I would love to go, and my daughter would really love to go. And obviously K-pop is the thing, and, you know, I love that. And actually in Melbourne in the last maybe 2 or 3 years, there's been lots more Korean restaurants open up and dessert restaurants. And it's just, yeah, it feels very cool. Your book pictures Korea in a way that I think only someone who knows the place and knows the people could take those photos, though. I think that's, to me, that came across really like straight away when I looked at the pictures. Yeah, how did you think about making that work? And I guess the idea of home in it for you, you know, coming from Korea, moving, I didn't realize, yeah, kind of I guess Seoul and then London and then back. How did you feel about making that work?
So I was commissioned by Louis Vuitton. You know, they do have the recognized series.
Yes, where they I know that series.
Yeah, okay. And so I was supposed to do about Seoul. And yeah, but I was using all my archival images, and I also went back a few times to do more new images. And I think when you're like away from home and living in a different country, you kind of see your country with more like kind of objective like eye. And you love part of it, you hate part of it. Then you kind of see what you hate more in a way that like, you can't do this, you have to change this, whatever. You have more kind of critical thinking about your own country, right, when you're outside of it. And I kind of want to embrace all of it. And then in a sense that one thing I didn't really like doing was to kind of sugarcoat thing. Like Korea is kind of obsessed with their representations towards like particularly Western countries. And I really didn't want to give that to this book. I didn't want to like make it prettier or than what it is, or like want to only show the prettiest part and then all like really like clean part or just beautifulness. I just didn't want to do that. I just wanted to embrace as a whole thing. And so yeah, I decided to like choose all these images more about like my own experience and then the close friends of mine and whatever I find it interesting in any ways, in with a critical eye or like loving eye. So the whole sense of Korea to me. And we finished the design. The book was going to come out anytime soon. And then we hear from the Korean PR team in Louis Vuitton saying we cannot publish this book in Korea. And wow. I was like, sorry, what? And I demanded more explanation. Like, why do you think this is inappropriate to be published in Korea? And they sent me this about 30 news articles about fashion houses being racist towards Asian, like including like they only hire models with tiny eyes. I'm like, what is this to do with me? And I think they are basically saying they're uncomfortable with my presentation of woman in the book. And which didn't make any sense because they're Koreans to begin with. And they were my first friends and family. And then if you actually have a problem with how they represent themselves, enjoying themselves, I think you're actually being racist.
Yeah.
And I emailed them back. I didn't say exactly how I just said, but I was trying to explain what you're doing. And it's not that I have to publish this book with you. I actually don't. But it's quite sad what you're doing, and you're actually doing what against of what you're trying to do. You're actually making racism even more prevalent here. You are actually limiting the representation of Asian woman in certain ways.
It's stereotypical, right?
Mm. Yeah, so that was quite shocking to me. Was actually quite pivotal for me in a way that how I think about things. It's not that I was sad about not publishing the book with them. It's more about there's actually a lot to fight for. And it's not actually just that a Western force is actually within us as well. It's actually even more so, I think. So it was a quite big learning curve. But still, Louis Vuitton headquarters was being really nice about it. And
okay.
They actually paid for the printing. We actually printed in the same printer where all the other fashion eye gets printed. And the person who commissioned me for the project had the publisher, and so we decided to publish through his company.
Wow.
So yeah, that's how the book came out. So every time people ask me oh, how come you wanted to publish a book about Korea? Well, I didn't really mean to. but I kind of was forced, but in a way that it felt actually important for me to publish the book after the rejection, because actually, you know what?
It's even more important, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why we named it as Almost Something, because this could have been something, but actually it didn't make it. So that's why it's called Almost Something. And my friend Mofi, who's a writer, wrote really beautiful text. But we edited down quite a lot because it was a bit more revealing. But then we didn't want to be rude to the company that they actually backed me with printing and, So I didn't want to somehow reveal or offend them. So we edited out the text quite a lot. So it's a bit more ambiguous. But yeah, I was like, I'm making this book to send this to the Louis Vuitton PR team in Korea. So I actually did at the end. I'm like,
look. Yeah, it's like,
I don't know if they actually knew what we're trying to say. then when I was trying to send the book, and I heard that all the PR team members who made the decision have left the company. So it's actually, for them, it's more temporal. It actually doesn't really matter to them as much as to me. Mm. And which is really heartbreaking. And yeah, and then I later on found out they were doing another book about Seoul, with different photographer, and I saw it, and I mean, it's beautiful images. It is very beautiful. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is daunting.
yeah. It's kind of really complex, that scenario, isn't it? Yeah. And how you're, I think again, you go, you're kind of vulnerable in that. You got set up to then not be able to do the thing you had wanted to do. But also, as you say, it was even more important to have the published book because of their response.
Yeah. In a way, it's a very lonely fight because I don't, that kind of woman, you feel like you don't have any side.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, so you can't win either way, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that was quite a big moment in my career.
You've also done it, you mentioned Joyce before, and you've done an exhibition with her, right? English as a Second Language. Again, your titles are awesome. Like, they're just, there's no beating around the bush. And I just think they're really funny. And so, and I've seen some of the images of that were published online. And that was talking about like painting stereotypes and references. And yeah, it was really cool. So how did that come about?
So the curator, Shona Marshall, she had done a show previously, and that show had both me and Joyce. It's called Posturing. And she also worked for Somerset House. But this exhibition was outside of Somerset House. And then she was leaving Somerset House, and she had to do one exhibition. I think it was actually to fill the cancellation.
The show. Okay.
And then she actually really liked our images from the previous show, and then she was thinking maybe we should do like a kind of highlighting Asian photography, because it was also kind of coinciding with all this Black Vanguard thing, and then I think maybe she felt that was quite relevant to do. And then me and Joyce and her were just chatting, and we kind of didn't want to make it to like almost limit in a way that is Asian only, and we wanted to be more inclusive in the notion with like who isn't really coming from, you know, like same place, or like just like moving into where we are, you know, there's so many people with different backgrounds and could feel all similar way. And so we wanted to talk about the particular in-betweenness, that how we feel like in a different place speaking English as a second language, because I think in a way that maybe me and Joyce felt a bit excluded as well within the movement it was going on at that time, because I mean, I think it's great that Black Vanguard happened, but then we're not part of it because of who we are. But then we also kind of have a similar sentiment, but then we didn't really have that chance to have that voice. So we were kind of reflecting that, and then we decided to make that more inclusive for that reason. And Joyce is really good at coming up with the name. So she
that's her name.
And then we're commissioned to produce a new work to go with Somerset House, and so again, I think it's the same spirit as my magazine. I don't like to conform. and I was like, okay, so this is like an Asian like representation, but I have to make a work to do with Somerset House. So how do I do that? And I had an idea to kind of almost invade Somerset House and kind of like subvert the power dynamic. So it's me using Somerset House, not Somerset House using me.
Yeah.
So I asked them to like use the building at night when no one's there. And so kind of like using all the rooms and running around naked with friends. And like placing my friend who just had the baby. And I was quite emotional about it because she's a single mom, and she was really struggling. She is not from like rich family, and she has a lot of traumas. And in a way, like her having baby made her happy. But then I kind of wanted to really photograph her in that Somerset House context, because I don't know, it just felt relevant. And I wanted to photograph close people. So I had like Moffy, who's like my best friend here, and my other best friend in Korea with the newborn baby. Like I just wanted to photograph them in Somerset House, in a bit more provocative way, challenging notions. And my friend, who my best friend from here, she's British, but she also became model. I mean, she's really beautiful, but like, I think she was more like a, she was kind of like labeled in a way that she was more quirky because she has cross eyes.
Oh, so, okay.
So, yeah. So we're like, let's just make it really crossed. And like, you know what I mean? Like, so we're kind of trying to like push all these like things.
Yeah.
Like about us, and then kind of make it more like a kind of almost like repulsive maybe. And then, or maybe like just a bit really free, and then kind of challenge that. And so, yeah, we had kind of like come with all this like kind of like, maybe, I don't know, not defect, but like, and the quality of ourselves, like people kind of see, might see differently, and then we're being judged on it. Mm. So, yeah. So we just, let's just have fun in at night of someone's house when that's ours.
Yeah. Wow. It's funny about that idea of being accessible, but also I think about people. So I don't speak two languages fluently. Like English is my first language badly, but I also say really weird things because I learned from a second language learner. So I do say some things and people look at me like, I think you've used the wrong word, or you've said that incorrectly. And I've talked to a few people who are similar to me, like Eurasian, you know, had one parent that had English, you know, has English as a second language, and they do the same thing. And it's like, you all of a sudden you realize you don't belong. But I think the way the world's going now, and maybe because I'm in education and there's so many international students coming into Melbourne, is that what I'm realizing is there's more people that speak English as a second language around. And actually what you do is so much more kind of difficult because you're constantly translating between the two. And again, I go back to that idea where there's so many in-between moments all the time. It's like, yeah, I think that's a really lovely trait. And I think what your works were trying to do is also push the power of that. You know what you were saying about, you're not sure why you decided to, you know, bring your friend over. And, but I think that's what it is, right? It's like, how far can I push the stereotype or the power or the trope or the expectation and turn it on its head so that it is not, it's so personal, but also so universal in that split moment.
Yeah. Also, I mean, it could be a coping mechanism as well. Like if you channel
that
energy
to
positive creativity rather than like things constantly hammering you down. I mean, it is a struggle for sure. And then I got hit like really hard when I first came here. I was thrown to like this really popular fashion course without even speaking the language. And I was like feeling like humiliated, misunderstood, and a lot of times. But then later on, became like, you know, as an artist, kind of look back on it and also even think about it, you know what, actually this could have been my strength too. And yeah, it's basically empowerment.
Yeah, and you stayed, right? Like I think that's the biggest resilience piece. Like you decided to go, fuck it, this is where I want to be and this is what I want to make. And you're now, you know, one of the, what I would say, like forefront, engaged, making really interesting work in a really hard industry.
I mean, yeah. I, the first year of the school, at the beginning, I was like really, really struggling. But at the end of the first year, I had the highest mark.
Wow. So. That's amazing. Congrats. That's huge, right? Like,
so maybe that was like actually a good like experience for me to have. So actually I can do this. Yeah, but I really pushed forward.
Yeah, you must be really strong.
I don't know. I mean, I am definitely a hustler. And
I like that. I can imagine you'd need to be in what you do, right?
Yeah. Not very ambitious as well.
Yeah.
Amazing. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about or mention? Because otherwise we've covered quite a lot of ground.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I'm kind of at another pivotal point now because...
You finished your master's too, right?
Yes, I did. And it with all this like industrial uncertainty and also what's happening in the world, and I'm kind of rethinking what like this job means to me and how I can do differently, and kind of like reignite my passion. How should I do that? I'm thinking about that at the moment.
Yeah. Do you have any, do you mean in terms of climate or politics or, I mean, all of
yeah,
it really, I guess.
All of that, like, yeah. Because really, I think like I used to do a lot of editorials, like with spending my own money. And because also I think like at the time, like people looked at the magazine more and it was more inspiring to do. But now it kind of doesn't really feel relevant to do so. It's almost feel too obnoxious for me to do it.
Yeah.
Like kind of just thinking what's happening in the world. And at the same time, it's not as fulfilling to me. So where does that energy go now?
Yeah. I feel like I had a conversation earlier today about that idea of finding the fire in something like that makes you actually get out of bed and like there's really worthy things that you could be doing in the world and you need to work out what are the ones that make you like, I guess, burn and feel like you've got skin in the game or something.
But I mean, I still think fashion has an enormous power
totally.
To people and like, you know, it has the power to reach so many audience. So I'm not saying like a fashion is irrelevant now for me, but just thinking about how, yeah, I can use it.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. Out of the Frame is supported by RMIT University Press Play Studio, is produced by Pia Johnson, music by Steph O'Hara, and graphic design by Brent Ledovitz.